Welcome to the ID10T podcast number 1072. I hope you're doing okay. I am sending you happy thoughts and good tidings. I don't know. I just couldn't bring myself to say good vibes because it just, I don't know. That's not part of my lingo. Hey man, good vibes. I don't know. But I guess ultimately, if I'm really breaking it down, they are vibes of the good kind. I guess they are vibrations, good vibrations, if you will. I'm kicking up good vibrations and I'm sending them your way. All right. Excitations? I don't know. This is getting too freeform improv here, guys. And I'm just not, I'm not comfortable with my word association skills. So, and scene. Anyway, I hope you're doing well. Again, I really appreciate you listening to the podcast, right now during this bizarre timeline that we've all dropped into. But let's talk about making stuff, right? Maybe you have time to make stuff now. Maybe you do. If you don't, totally fine, totally understandable. If you do and you are, great. You can send us events at id10t.com. You can email us and let us know about the thing you're making, and we'll try to get it on to let people know about it. All right? Like Seiji, who writes, I picked up a guitar when I was 9, and a few years ago, I started releasing my own music. Finally, at 22, I've released a 5-track EP I'm proud of, titled Of Gods and Kings. The title comes from a number of songs being written in mythological allegory from King Arthur to Athena. I draw major inspiration from Ray LaMontagne, but my friends just say it sounds like an indie film soundtrack. The entire EP was written, recorded, mixed, and mastered by me. You can find it under my name on all streaming major streaming services or through my Instagram at Seiji Furukawa, which is SEIJIFURUKAWA, Seiji Furukawa. So great job, Seiji. I mean, listen, to get to experience like everything top to bottom to putting out your album, I mean, that just has to feel like such an incredible accomplishment that you get to understand on every level how the stuff gets made. What an incredible experience. I will go listen to Of Gods and Kings as soon as I am done with this intro. So congratulations. And 22, nice work. Gosh, I wish I had learned the guitar when I was 9. It's so much better than... Listen, it's fine to learn guitar in your 40s, but I feel like 9 when your brain is just so much more pliable. It should just be so ingrained in your hands playing guitar. So congratulations and well done. Events at id10t.com for anyone else for things that you're making. This episode is Imogen Poots, who is she's British, an amazing actor. She's been in a lot of really cool stuff, by the way. I'll just go through it. She was in V for Vendetta. She was in 28 Weeks Later. She was in Fright Night. By the way, she has a million credits, but I'm giving through some highlights that you've probably seen. She was in Pop Star, Never Stop Stopping. And she was in Black Christmas, which is a really fun movie if you haven't seen it yet. And she's in I Know This Much Is True, which Catherine Hahn was in, who was on the podcast last week. And she's also in a movie right now called Vivarium, which Lydia and I watched, and we loved. Jesse Eisenberg is in it. And it is, I don't want to talk about it too much because I don't want to give it away. It is sort of a sci-fi psychological thriller. That's great. And also, Imogen told me that she was actually working when the quarantine went into effect, Why the Last Man, the TV version of Why the Last Man, which is one of my favorite comics. It was it's a Brian K. Vaughan, P. Aguirre comic, and it is an apocalypse story, but it's so good. So I'm so excited that they're making that. I'll be excited for them to complete that. But Vivarium is available on VOD, and I Know This Much Is True is on HBO and HBO Go / HBO Now. Imogen was just wonderful to talk to. I talked to her, and she was in the UK. Again, credit to Zoom for making these possible, that we have the technology to keep doing these. So there it is. And here's the ID10T podcast number 1072 with Imogen Poots as we roll the thing.
Initiating ID10T protocol. We'll be right back.
until this thing blows over, and then we can help small businesses, we can help right. movie theaters, we can help. But it's it's a strange, it's like a panic of not knowing where to put that energy, isn't it? It is,
and especially for a species of creatures who craves a certain amount of certainty and needs some predictability. It's just trying to adapt to a new, and when things are unpredictable, then we don't know what the fuck to do.
I know. It's so true. It's so fascinating, the levels of control that we have, and unbeknownst to us. And then times like these, you're like, wow, I'm a control freak. And I always thought I thought that was everybody else's problem.
And most of it's an illusion.
Yeah, it's totally nuts. By the way, I was laughing because I listened to your podcast that you did with Joaquin Phoenix, The Joker, and you're chatting about pangolins. Do you remember that?
Yes, pangolins, which are endangered, so you can't, yeah.
Yeah, and you wanted to get a tattoo, but now I guess, because aren't they, they're related to coronavirus, right?
Oh, pangolins are? I didn't realize the pangolin. Oh my God.
Yes!
Fucking pangolins, what are you
it's
doing?
It's all pangolins and bats. This is the thing, I was like, if you got that tattoo now, that would be like the 2020 logo, which...
Well, also, you're talking about Joker, and then there's Batman, who's like, guys, I didn't, I'm not responsible for this. I didn't poop on anything. Like, oh, God.
Yeah, you have to get it lasered off. Thank God you didn't. Maybe you did it already.
I did not. I still don't have a tattoo, because I change my mind every week.
That's good.
Yeah, the pangolin, oh my God, that would be... Yeah, people would either be like, oh, that's cool. You're like, that means we got through it. That's, or they're like, fuck you. That's
Yeah, you were a fan. I mean, I don't know if it's people were putting them in sandwiches or what was going on, but same deal. I think that it got transferred to humans via way of the pangolin.
I mean, pangolins don't seem particularly, they don't seem appetizing. They're just like a spiny anteater. They're like a shell. They're like a... not spiny. They're like armor. They're shell.
On the nose.
Yeah, and so yeah. They don't seem like that would be a tasty treat.
No, and they just seem so sort of. I don't know. They seem harmless. You know, they seem kind of. They're silly, sort of.
That's what it was, is that they had had enough. They were tired of being nature's little suited armor clowns, and they're like, we'll show you how serious this shit is.
I had totally forgotten
about that.
There you go. I was worried that everyone would have like been reminding you, and then you'd be like, yes, I know. But
I have another favorite animal, but it's extinct, and so there's no way that it could cause any pandemics.
Which animal?
It's called a gomphothere, and the gomphotheres were basically these. They were in a class of animals called proboscideans. They're elephant related. And so rather than elephants have these trunks, with their little nostrils on the end, and gomphotheres, they're fucking so cool looking. They're these like shovel-faced elephants. So they have these shovel faces, and they look so weird, but they've been extinct for, tens of thousands of years. So
they're kind of like a platypus looking, like a beak.
They don't have a beak. It literally looks like their face kind of looks like a, almost like a snow cat shovel, like a big, it's very off-putting at first because it looks like something you recognize, but different and weird.
Strange. We got to bring them back somehow. Jeez, it's not very useful, actually.
This is what I'm going to do with my quarantine time. I'm going to figure out how to rebreed and introduce gomphotheres back into the ecosystem.
Good.
So what are the rules in London, by the way? I would imagine you must be allowed to leave to go to pharmacy or market or something, but then
it's the same deal. Yeah. As much as you can, limiting any trips, to the grocery store or pharmacy. So trying to do like a grocery shop for a week or 2 weeks at a time, and then pharmacy only if you need to pick up some drugs, and then exercise, which seems to be kind of an elasticated term because people are going to the parks just in their yoga gear or their like running gear. But to be fair, I kind of get it. But people have been pretty good, especially the last few days. There was a more of a stringent lockdown, and obviously Boris Johnson has been put in intensive care, but apparently he's stable.
Right.
So I think that was a real shock to a lot of people, because it sort of brought it closer to home. It's this figure we've been watching every night, obviously on the TV, in the news. Right. And right. I think that sort of, yeah, that solidified it for people.
Man, and is the weather amenable to outdoor activity over there right now?
It is. It's so, this is the creepiest thing, but it's so beautiful at the moment. It's so nice out, which is I'm kind of happy about, because I'm a fan of sort of being inside with the sunlight outside, and it makes the whole environment a lot nicer. So I'm okay with that, even though it's ironic. But yeah, it's bringing on spring and summer now, and it's sort of it is a strange situation. I've noticed most of all, though, it's a generation above who are just being rebels. They just won't quit their routines.
I 1,000% agree. It is the next up generation, and I feel like it probably has something to do with the fact that it's almost a case where their wisdom and experience is working against them a little bit, because they've lived through a lot.
Totally.
And they've always gotten through it, and they've been like, "Well, it's just like the flu." And it's like, "Well, it's not quite like the flu.
Exactly. You know? Like,
it's a little bit different." But
exactly.
they just feel like, "Oh, this is." We've been through worse. We're, you know, and I think that they're just also kind of set in their ways and really don't want to be told like what they can and can't do.
I know, it's so true. My dad's from Northern Ireland, and he kind of, you know, he lived through the Troubles and car bombs and all that stuff. So I think sort of the idea of this just seems at arm's length, but it's super not. It's super right there.
I find the funniest thing is that I scroll through the suggestions on Instagram because, you know, I follow a lot of guitar and piano accounts and artists. And so I just kind of like discovering new stuff.
Yeah.
But it keeps trying to feed me like they're just random people on Instagram that I have no idea who they are. And they're in quarantine, but still trying to do like their.
Oh, I can't.
And I'm like, what are you, now is not the time for Instagram posing.
I know.
In your fucking quarantine backyard. Just be a person, for Christ's sake. What are you?
I know. And it's a really fine line, all this live Instagram stuff between, listen, do you know Willie Watson's music?
No.
He was originally an old Crow Medicine Show. Okay. And now he's got a solo career for a long time now, but he's been doing these live performances which are extraordinary and beautiful, and covers of John Prine and all of that. And then on the flip side you've got people who are just doing like, it's just attention seeking, and it's a little bit strange.
And it's the thing that makes it sad, the thing that kind of makes me sad about it is like, I think this is your coping mechanism. I think this is all you know. The environment has totally changed, but you haven't adapted yet. You're just still doing the same stuff from from the regular timeline from a month ago, and all the weird poses and the ooh. And like,
we actually never needed other people anyway. That's creepy. They just needed that screen, and they're totally fine. Yeah, it's super weird, but it's fascinating to watch humans behaving the way they do.
Yeah, but if that makes those people feel better, then you know what, then so be it. I don't know if you go on Reddit at all, but what's been interesting is that they have like a I can't remember what it's called, but it's like, I think maybe it's like Reddit public access or something, where they will pop up just a random live stream of a person in, you know, in their living room. And it's been so wonderful because it's like musicians and DJs and stuff, and they're just in their living room, like either spinning or some, I watched some guy play bass for a while, practicing bass. And it's just fun to sort of like, to watch people kind of artistically processing all this and like, well, I don't know what else to do. And then all of a sudden on Reddit, like 100,000 people are just watching them.
Right. It is so interesting what people fall back on and what they're inspired to do. And I listened to this really great podcast actually the other day. I just say grud, which is great and good together. Can't tell if that's just like
good.
A skill or nerves.
But
it was with George Saunders. It was a podcast of George Saunders, and he was saying how, because he is a writer, it was a letter to his students where he teaches in Syracuse, and he was talking about now is the time to record it all if you can. So even the text messages you're sending to your friends, or the emails you're getting, or the pictures you're taking, is like, make sure that you're recording it for the mm-hmm. future, because this is a historical time and it's so easy to kind of neglect those things. But it's funny, like all the different points of view as to how to kind of think about it and think about this time rather than just be overwhelmed by the whole situation.
That's a great idea, actually, because I know that there are apps, probably on Android and definitely on iOS, mm-hmm. that are essentially like diary apps where you can pull in pictures and audio and write entries. And maybe for people who are just clamoring for something to do, just create like a real active visual, audio, and literary journal, even if it's a paragraph every day of just stream of consciousness, and then, you know, look at it in a year.
Yeah, it's so true. It's so true. It's so hard to say. And that's the same goes. I keep saying to everyone, it's a drop in the ocean, the amount of time we're being asked to just obey the rules, but it seems pretty endless right now, for sure.
Well, especially when, you know, most people are like, rules don't apply to me. It's me. You can't tell me, you know, like we're very much.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people have been conditioned to sort of think like, oh, that means everyone else and not me. And this is a thing that's right. Like, oh, motherfucker, this means you too.
It's so true. We have a habit of doing that. It'll never happen to me. It's a terrible thing to fall into.
Were you working on anything when this went down?
I was just about to start production on Why the Last Man.
Oh, I loved that comic book.
Oh, it's so great. And it's wonderful. There's a real fan base for this comic. It's fantastic.
An apocalyptic event show.
I know. Viruses, men dying. Men are very vulnerable to this. it's tricky. No, I just got to New York, actually. And with my 5 suitcases for like 7 months, whatever. Yeah. And then we got word that they were going to postpone it, obviously, like every other production and job across the world. But it's pretty nuts. I mean, it's questionable if that's something that people will want to see.
Oh, yes, they absolutely will. I'll give you 3 reasons. Number 1, Brian K. Vaughan, who's amazing.
Yeah.
Number 2, it was a great comic series. And number 3, I really do. I mean, it can't be. It's not a coincidence that a bunch of you know, Contagion style movies people are watching right now.
It's true, and it kind of reflects back an experience. I mean, I'm excited about it because I just think it's so much more than. Obviously, there's a virus at the center of it, but what it explores by way of that is so cool.
Yeah,
and I love the character, and I love all the other characters and the actors involved and all that. But it's good that it's more of a socio-political idea and exploration rather than just like people dying everywhere, which really are in the midst of right now.
I would imagine you guys are off just indefinitely until
I mean, pretty much we're all in close contact, and it's actually really interesting how FX especially and like the people in that production I've been really reaching out to make sure everyone's okay. And I think that just goes so far, doesn't it? Beyond the work that everyone's kind of checking in on everyone's well-being. So it's more about sort of, is everybody good? You know, despite the, you know, acknowledging that we were meant to be doing this thing for a long time. I think that's really kind and sweet. But it's hard to say. I mean, I know a lot of like theater productions shut early and those won't be picked up again probably ever. And it's pretty difficult, I guess, with what you do with this podcast. It's kind of, is it a blessing because you can still do it despite the circumstances?
I'm incredibly lucky because the television show that I do for Walking Dead, we just did it here where I'm sitting.
Yeah.
For the last 3 weeks, we did it here. And so we were able to do that. I've actually been insanely busy. I've been doing podcasts and then just sort of still pitching ideas and stuff for things that are in development. And so I've definitely been lucky in terms of job. The only thing that I cannot do is stand up. I had to cancel all my stand up dates, but I have friends who are creating these like private Zoom chat rooms where they're inviting 300 people and they're basically just performing from their, you know, bedrooms or living rooms or whatever. And I dropped in to watch one of the shows and it actually worked pretty well.
Really?
Yeah. So maybe that's a thing we'll have to start doing because I have no idea when that's going to be a thing people will be comfortable coming and
watching. Right. I mean, I can't get my head around that. It kind of it rings true of the idea that these days with acting, you so often have to make a self-tape, right? You have to make a tape rather than...
Right.
If you're on Australia and they're doing this thing in New York and you have to, like, do something in your own bedroom, it's so bizarre because the quality of the air, like the weight of the air, is different in an audition room or at a stand-up event than it is kind of in your own safe space. It's sort of, it's like cotton wool in your ears or something. It doesn't give you the adrenaline rush, and like
you can use the best take, though, you know. Yeah. Like you can send in the best take and you don't have to be like, fuck, I got nervous in the audition and
Didn't put on deodorant. Yeah, exactly. Doesn't matter.
You don't have to put on deodorant if you don't feel like it.
You really don't. You can just be a free woman. So great.
I looked at your Wikipedia page real fast just to see like where you started everything. And I might actually cut this out of the podcast because I'm so embarrassed to admit this. I think you were born literally the day I was being handed my high school diploma.
Really? 3rd of June?
Yes, because I saw your birthday. I graduated high school in 1989 and I saw your birthday and I go, June 3rd, that's probably around when I would have been graduating. And so I looked it up on Google what day of the week it was, and it was a Saturday. And I feel like that might have been the actual day I was graduating.
Oh, that's so crazy. I really think it was at the same time. I just like shot out of that vagina and you were like,
yeah, exactly. In the same way that the diploma was shooting out into my waiting my hands.
God, that would be cosmic, wouldn't it? It'd be great.
But then also just made me feel like, God damn it, I am really getting old and that feels weird. I was a fully grown, like, could I have voted yet? No, actually I was still 17. So, but that's still like that really, like, I was like, oh, this is really cool. Oh my God, I feel ancient.
It is strange, isn't it? I mean, I just can't compute that people are born in like 1998. And that's only kind of 9 years after me, but I'm like, what? That doesn't work. This is
deeply... Oh yeah. People born in the 2000s are just full on adults now.
And saving the world. I know.
Yeah. They did not know the 1900s at all. And they're fine with that.
It's strange. And it's strange to think about like the albums that were huge when you were born, or like the number one when you were born, which I actually don't know, which I should find out. But I love that. I love the idea that there were teenagers, whatever, like, what were you listening to when you were 17? What would have been like your go-to song?
Oh my God. I had a kind of a wide berth of, I did listen to pop music. So there was,
nice.
I listened to like glam metal and pop music, but also British new wave.
Wow.
And also like just like weird progressive Brit rock. Like I loved XTC, was a band that was like one of my favorite bands.
Ooh.
And they're a really interesting band because the lead singer, Andrew Partridge, like pretty early on in their career developed stage fright. And so they never performed live. So just write an album, record it. And then I think they just kind of forgot the songs after that because they never had to play them.
Wow, what a life.
Yeah, I was listening to REM, but then I was also listening to like Belle Biv DeVoe, which might have been 89, 90. So yeah, it was a very fertile time for music because there were all these different subgenres of music. Like hip hop was evolving and, alternative music was evolving and I don't know.
It never gets old when you look at an album. Like I really got into Pavement a few years ago and I remember looking at a specific album by them and it probably was like 1996 and it's just like, whoa, that's so crazy that you're just this little bumpkin rolling around when that album was huge.
Was that yours then, Pavement? Was that...
No, when I was 17, I was a big Smiths fan. So I was, The Queen is Dead was my album, but Morrissey these days has some pretty dubious opinions about everything. So
that's interesting that you say that because one of my best friends, April, who, by the way, a couple years ago went to England, met a Brit, had a whirlwind romance, cut to a few months later, they're married and she's living in Brighton.
Whoa.
And she was such a Morrissey fan, like saw him in concert hundreds of times.
Same,
had a stand-up tour around cities he was performing in. And like after some controversial stuff, basically had like a breakup with him where it's like, God damn it, I love your music, but I just don't feel, I don't feel aligned with you anymore. And I got blowback from like the diehard Morrissey fans. And she was like, yeah, but I just don't, I don't feel comfortable anymore. So.
No, it's difficult. It's difficult. That's the perennial question, isn't it? The sort of when the values come into the artist's way or the artist's process, especially with all those filmmakers that we all know about, and it's sort of sinister, you know, the things we hear about them, and it's yet they've made masterpieces, and it's interesting to think about.
What's your favorite Smith song? Is it a Smith song or is it a Morrissey solo?
It'd probably be a Smith song. I love Still Ill.
Mm-hmm.
That's on Rank, and that's also on, I think it's on the Smiths. And Cemetery Gates is mm-hmm. a great song. So it'd probably be those two right up there.
I remember when I was in high school, because I also had some friends who were into very alternative, like super alternative music, which at the time, the Smiths and The Cure and Depeche Mode, they were very alternative in the States. There was not like pop music in the 80s. And like Depeche Mode didn't really tip until like Personal Jesus the next couple of years.
But, right.
Girlfriend in a Coma was like, such a weird, in high school, you're like, holy shit,
yeah,
you guys are unhinged, you know? stop me if you think you've heard this one before. There's a light that never goes out. You know, just these.
Oh, yeah.
These like great. Sad boy thematic, this kind of like, you know.
I'm very sad. I'm feeling very sad. And I'm
I know, and talking about Oscar Wilde and getting away with it with Daffodils in your back pocket. Like,
yes, but the songs were like, the dissonance of this like kind of sad, this sad boy lyrics, but with a very like jaunty.
Totally. Vibe. It's like, yeah, disco melancholia. I don't know what it is. It's so cool.
Imogen, I'm going to run down the number one songs of each month of 1989.
Oh, great.
I'm just sort of curious to see if any of these mean anything to you. Starting in January, Every Rose Has Its Thorn by Poison. Do you know that song?
I don't know that song well or at all. Okay.
Well, Poison was like a glam rock band, and Every Rose Has Its Thorn was their like ballad.
Oh, wow.
Sort of the bad boy, like, I'm hard to love, but every rose has its thorn. No, like, you gotta. So, My Prerogative by Bobby Brown.
Okay, nice.
Phil Collins, Two Hearts.
Oh, that's gotta mean something because it's Phil.
It's
Collins.
Phil. Yeah, it's Phil Collins. Yeah. Paula Abdul, Debbie Gibson and Paula Abdul kind of battled it out in February and March. Right. The Bangles.
Oh,
and then
that means a lot.
Yes. The which one?
The Bangles means a lot.
The Bangles is the Bangles are amazing.
Yeah.
Roxette. She's got the look. Fine Young Cannibals.
It drives me crazy.
Oh,
Madonna, Like a Prayer was 1989.
Nice.
You got Bon Jovi. The Day That You Were Born, the number one song, yeah, I don't think you're going to know this, was a soap opera star named Michael Damian who recorded a cover of the song Rock On. Hey, kids, rock and roll. And I think it was for a Corey Feldman, Corey Haim movie.
Wow. That makes a lot of sense. I know more about all the Coreys now because there was an interview recently with the Corey from Stand By Me.
Yes, Corey Feldman, yes.
And he was talking about all the other Coreys around that time. There seemed to be a lot of Coreys. And I know this because Lisa Simpson and The Simpsons referenced the Corey hotline for a long time. And as a child, I didn't know what that was. And
yes.
Granted, you're 30, I now understand.
Yes. The classic Corey hotline joke where she's addicted to calling the 900 number.
Yes. Yes.
Fantastic. Yes. Yeah, there were a lot of Coreys, and I guess Feldman's the official Corey spokesperson. So that was The Day You Were Born. Then Bette Midler, Wind Beneath My Wings. Then
oh,
a new kid song. Then you got Milli Vanilli, a very controversial band. I'm sure, I don't know if you remember.
No idea.
Okay, so Milli Vanilli, were these two dudes. I think their names were Rob and Fabrice, these like, I think, model dudes. And after they had like won Grammys and stuff and had a bunch of hit songs, it came out that they were lip syncing everything. Other people who were, I swear to Christ, I feel like I should be whittling on a rocking chair talking to, I feel so old right now. Ah, Milli Vanilli, they didn't sing their own goddamn songs, but boy, did they get caught.
And, I'm loving this.
Yeah, so if you're bored, look up the Milli Vanilli drama, because it, I don't know if anything like it has happened in music since, but they were like the biggest band, one of the biggest bands in the world. And then all of a sudden, like, oops, they're actually not singing any of their songs.
Oh, my gosh. Obviously, I'm going to spend the next few months learning everything I can about these guys. But are they still alive? Like, are they now, like,
18? One of them passed away, and one of them is still alive. I don't know what they're doing now, but they had a ton of hit songs. And then almost just kind of vanished immediately once that – I think they probably had to get their Grammy back. Or give it to the dudes who sang the songs or produced them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you got some Janet Jackson in 89, some Billy Joel. Oh, We Didn't Start the Fire was 89.
Oh, lovely. Well, there are some crackers in there.
Yeah, and Prince's Bat Dance. Bat Dance.
So it was actually crammed full of gold.
Yeah, so that was the time capsule of the year that you were born.
Nice.
And so it's
good to know. Soap Star was number one when I was born. That's great.
Which one was that?
The guy who was a soap star?
Oh, yeah, this guy who was a soap star, Michael Damian. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. I wonder what that means. It must mean something to someone.
Well, I think it means, hey, kids, rock and roll, rock on. You know, we're going to get through this.
No, but I meant in the sense of, like, what does it mean that the day you're born, the number one song is a soap star doing a cover?
To be fair, this is the U.S. Billboard Hot 100.
Oh, so, well.
I don't know what was going on in the British charts. I certainly, I can look up Billboard UK. Oh yeah, 1989 in British music. So the day you were born in, it was, oh my God. Wow. So interesting. It was a cover of a song by Jerry and the Pacemakers called Ferry Cross the Mersey. And it was like Paul McCartney and a bunch of
the legends,
a bunch of people,
but another cover.
Another cover.
Jesus. It's like, I'm cheap. I love that Paul McCartney was involved though. That makes everything fine. Everything's okay now.
Yeah. Oh, you had some really cool ones. You had Simple Minds that year. You had Mark Almond, who was in the Soft Cell, Bangles. You know,
this is all really useful for you because of all the quizzes that are happening right now. We're both getting a lot of knowledge about what was number one in 89.
I mean, if you find yourself in a virtual pub quiz with 1989 music, you are going to... Oh, that's the other thing, is that Britain, it's such a pub culture.
I know.
How are people... I mean, I have not been a drinker for almost 2 decades, but I know that it's so much a part of the socialization there. So what are people doing, like Zoom pubs? What are they doing?
Yeah, quarantinis is the term that's been thrown around over here. Bunch of morons. We have shut down all the pubs and all the restaurants and all of that. I think people are still ordering in from places where they can. But I've just been drinking a lot of wine. My boyfriend and I have just been going through all of the wine that's been, you know, we're like, we'll have this on a really special day in the future. And we're just having it on a Thursday night. And it's fantastic.
Every day is a special day in quarantine.
Yeah, pub culture, definitely. It's super strange, especially, you know, England, when the sun comes out, it's right. Like moth to a flame to a pub.
Yes.
it's eerie without all of them open. I mean, same thing in New York, right? It's like New York is the bar culture there is so, it's the epicenter of the
world. Yeah, you take two steps, you can just fall, you can trip into a bar in New York. It's
and cocktail hour. It's really interesting. I can't remember where it was. I was reading about this recently where cocktail hour is such a mystical specific thing. And I wonder for you, if you don't drink, is it something where it's kind of, does it still have an exotic sense to it? Or is it sort of just like people just talking shit?
It's boring to me.
Yeah, exactly.
I, She's boring. Never been a drinker, and I just haven't been for a long time. And it's boring to us because I know that there are a lot of sober people who can actually just go and socialize and have a club soda or a tea or a coffee or something. But to me, I just find like the smell of a bar just kind of ekes me out. And then also when people start getting buzzy, they just get real close and they start like breathing on you and they talk louder and then they kind of stop making sense. And then it's like, oh yeah, if you kind of need to be in it with them for all of this.
100%.
Not for everyone.
I totally get it. I took the whole of January off booze and I found that like, gosh, people can be super tedious and we just egg each other on. And it's this like delusion that people operate within. It's, it depends who you get, right?
Yeah.
It depends who your buddy is.
But then the scary thing is, and you go, wait, was I like that? Oh my God. Yeah. Did I?
I know.
Oh no.
I know. Awful. Never need to know.
By the way, my wife and I, by sheer coincidence, before you even booked to do the podcast, we watched Vivarium the day it came out on.
Thank you. That's so nice that you saw it.
Loved it. And it is kind of a quarantine, dystopian quarantine tale.
Right. I know. It's very strange. And it's come to my mind that I suppose no matter when you make a project, it'll be critiqued either at a festival or when it comes out, and therefore the context when it comes out is what's relevant and it'll kind of be applied to the project. So I was sort of saying for a while, yeah, super crazy, because you know when we made it, it was really the kind of prevalent ideas were the housing crisis or gender roles or your responsibility in society, etc. but now it's a totally different lens that's been put on and focus. And for a second there, I kind of felt stupid talking about a film that we'd made. It just seemed sort of irrelevant the last few weeks. But I'm like, hey, you know, there's a lot to be paralleled there with the film, and it won't be for everyone. And that's sort of part of its lure, maybe. But yeah, I think the concept of being obviously isolated is something that's being totally reflected, but also what happens when your job is taken away from you and your family is taken away from you? What's your sort of identity? That's sort of something which I think we're all questioning or reflecting on in some way.
Right. But I hope, because I know a lot of people, and I felt this way too, were very hesitant to, when everything started, like, well, I feel weird promoting stuff. There's so much really important stuff going on in the world. And I don't, but then I really do think that people appreciate the distraction of entertainment and they like the escape, and it's your job. And, you know, it's okay. Like, it's okay to, I mean, 'cause we're all in the same boat, you know, and everyone's doing the best they can. I don't think anyone would fault a person for like, hey, a lot of people worked really hard on this thing.
Yeah.
And hopefully people understand that in order to, you know, like restart the entertainment industry, which is in a bit of flux, people need to be watching stuff to help infuse that back into the economy. And so it's, I don't know. I hope there's no lingering feelings of, I feel weird talking about a movie. I mean, a lot of people worked hard on that. You should.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a big point. It's like the number of people involved in it and the fact that the cinemas obviously closed just as we are releasing the film, which is just one of those things that happen. And if it means that at home people have a chance to see it more potentially, that's awesome. And it is something which, you know, I think we're all pretty proud of it. Like, it was such a gamble, something like that. And I wonder how does it make you feel? Were you sort of just like horrified? or were you kind of, there is a dark humor, I guess.
I mean that, but that movie's so in the zone of the type of stuff that Lydia and I watch. You know, we watch a lot of horror, psychological thriller, dystopian future, Black Mirror-y type of stuff. And so it is so squarely in the zone of stuff that we like. But the thing that I don't want to talk about details of it too much because I want people to take the journey of it. But the thing that I was watching, and I'm thinking like, this actually would make a really cool play, because the way that it's works, again, without giving too much away, I think it could totally work as a play.
That's a great point, because it also, what it has at its core is, you know, it's an absurdist story. So it, and all the absurdist playwrights out there, like Ionesco or even Beckett or something like that, it kind of fits right in. And I think that's because of the Irish sensibility right. of it too, or the folks behind it who are magically nuts. But no, it totally lends itself to the stage, and it's so sparse, and it's interesting. That's a really cool idea. I hadn't actually thought of that.
Yeah, it might be a fun, I mean, who knows? Who knows how these things work? I'm sure that there are lawyers, and you know, it takes a lot. But it is just because of the way the set is and the colors of it. I mean, it just, to me, I love like kind of sci-fi stuff that is able to do sci-fi, and I consider it sci-fi. Do you consider it sci-fi or psychological thriller?
I think a bit of both. I think it's like a mixed bag. I say psychological thriller because it's about psychosis, but then you've got this, like, without giving too much away, the boy and all of that, and what he entails, that's sort of certainly sci-fi. But I think it's sort of, it's got a leg on each. I think, and in a weird way, I don't know if you feel this, but more and more genre as a term just seems so elasticated, right? Like, if genre used to mean movies like The Blob, it's now Black Mirror, and it's something kind of slightly more, I don't know, cerebral potentially or whatever, but right. it feels more, people are getting more excited about genre as a playing field where it's less about gratuitous violence or gore, but it's more about kind of the exploration of human nature under certain circumstances or pressures, and that's what we all kind of crave.
Yeah, but I love this is a weird statement, but I love sci-fi that doesn't really have a lot of special effects. And the reason that I love that is because it forces the filmmakers, the creators, to paint a world without having the luxury of like, oh, CGI monster, CGI.
Yeah.
Not that I don't love that stuff, but the movies that use, like, one of the greatest Doctor Who episodes in history to me is an episode called Blink, which is all about the Weeping Angels. And there's not a lot of special effects in it. It's just the way that the shots were created with these statues in a way that made it so creepy. And I just love the idea that people can paint a sci-fi ecosystem without a ton of... And there are some special effects in it. There's some trippy shit that happens. But
yeah, but it's just the idea that you're left with. Like, still the scariest movie ever is The Others, because it's all psychological, or like Stoker, or movies like that where you're kind of left trying to piece together something, and it's eerie. There's a haunting nature to something, which it doesn't just live on the screen. It lives in your mind a long time after the fact. But have you seen Night of the Comet?
Of course, yeah. It's like classic.
It's so funny. I saw it. They had it at the Nighthawk in Brooklyn, one of the Nighthawks a few months ago, and I went to see it. And it was so funny because basically the girls would be sorting out a huge, huge apocalyptic disaster, and then they'd hop off their bikes and just suddenly start boogieing. And it was just like, with this incredible hair.
That's the 80s for you. Yeah,
this is great.
It's like it creates the mutants and everyone turns into these piles of dust. It's great. Night of the Comet is great. Like it's funny that there are gems in the 80s that at the time people are like, it's just some weird genre cult movie. No one's going to remember this. And some of them actually like take root and are still talked about today.
Totally, totally. And I wonder, it makes me think, you know, I've done a couple genre pieces that at the time were quite polarizing potentially. That makes it sound sort of grander or that more people cared than they did. But in the sense of when something isn't immediately like adored or relatable or trusted, it takes time to sort of find its audience and then becomes beloved. And it's seems so often with these 80s movies that that kind of, that's occurred.
Yeah, I mean, especially with people, like with Gen Xers like myself, there's the nostalgia factor where we sort of remember like, wow, yeah, I remember when that was reality, when that big hair just looked like hair, you know?
Yeah.
But then I would imagine for you, it's almost like me looking at stuff in the 60s, like, whoa, what a crazy peek back into how people were back then, you know?
It's like an arm's length thing, because obviously, you know, I think about my mom as a young woman during that decade, but it's really, it was just before me, really, and just the colors, the vibrancy of it. It's like when you think about, when you're a child and you think about the past and black and white, and then you think about the 80s as like a crazy hallucinogenic rush.
But the 80s were coke fueled, and I think that a music producer told me once, he said, do you know why so much of the music in the early to mid 80s was, there was not a lot of low end. It was a lot of really high end, you know, like, especially like, there just wasn't a lot of, outside of hip hop, there wasn't a lot of bass and things. Things were really high end. And he said, the reason things sounded so tinny and trebly is because the music producers were doing, everyone was doing so much coke that it affected how they were hearing the songs. And so they just kept cranking up the high end. And it just, like, even that sort of a cultural thing versus a decade before when people were doing totally different drugs in the 70s, and that's why everything was so, like...
Everyone was like, oh my God, it sounds great! It sounds great!
Heavy and trippy and, you know, like, greasy. And so it is, like, that idea that a whole cultural movement is influenced by just the drugs that the creators were doing.
Yes! That's fantastic! I love that. I love that. Wow.
And by the way, you say that, and I feel like, is that a boombox radio on your dresser back there? Is that a tape deck?
It's an old school cassette.
There might be a Milli Vanilli tape in there already. Like, yes. It might be in there already.
Perfect. Fingers crossed. I hope so. There's this, my boyfriend's got this Sonos.
Yeah.
Yeah. All linked up around the house, but it fails us frequently. So, you know, you got to just go back to basics.
So you've got the tape deck and the antennas up. You can pick up a radio station if you need to hear what's going on.
I know, it's fantastic. We've got a lot of those like mode dial switcheroos.
Fantastic.
Keeping it real.
Have you all discussed the first thing you're going to do? So let's say, you know, whatever it is in a couple weeks or a month or whatever it is. And they go, okay, everyone, you can go out now and do whatever you want. Have you decided, are you going to leave that day? Are you going to stay in for a while? Are you going to, what's the first thing?
I'm not going to stay in for a while, but the first thing I'm going to do is go see my mum because she lives in London too. And I haven't, and my mum and dad, I haven't seen them obviously because I'm convinced that I just want to wait till the end of this isolation period. So see them. That's kind of the most sentimental thing. But then, I wonder, I mean, you know what it is? It sounds so corny, but it's so true about all the things that you took for granted, all of the everyday activities or the routine or the rituals that we had, and you really miss them. And I'm kind of a solitary bird most of the time, but that's not to say that I don't like being around other people and like being in the midst of all of that too. And it's all very well and good to be the person who's like, I'm going to stay at home and read a book, which is my favorite thing to do to a detriment. and it's interesting having this time because you do think, well, yeah, the world is so much bigger. And I think we have all been so globally connected. I just hope that that lasts. I hope that sort of doesn't just kaput at the end of this period, you know, when hopefully we have some time to go back out into the world again. But yes, it's the corny stuff that rings true, isn't it?
Yeah. I miss the fact that, you know, there was one little cafe that I used to eat breakfast at every morning and I had a little writing ritual and I ordered the same thing every single day. And that and Disneyland, which is a big ticket item, but going to the cafe is really... Like, I miss that so much. I'm going to be so excited to be able to go back and just sit down and have the same breakfast and see the same group of regulars and just
feel And isn't it interesting? It's this, whether or not you go every day or once a week, whatever it is, with that cafe, it's that sense of certainty, and it's that sense of I will be going back to that place. And as we were saying at the beginning of our conversation, it's really fascinating what happens when we feel uncertain, or knowledge isn't being fed to us, or sort of where to believe again. It's the whole media question, isn't it? And until we kind of, it's just this like open-ended question mark right now, and it's a lot harder to do something without a deadline.
Right, right.
It's it's interesting. So for now, I'm just eating. My boyfriend baked this banana bread, so we're just eating stuff all the time. I mean, it's shocking, right? Just keeps coming towards you.
I can't tell you how many times a day I have a bowl of cereal, which I never do.
Wow.
I'm like, well, why not? Why not? Why not have a fucking bowl of cereal at 3 o'clock in the afternoon? You know?
Isn't that interesting? Do you have children?
No, we have a puppy though.
Yes.
Not that it's the same, but he does.
Hairy child.
We have a small hairy child who is eating up a lot of attention, thankfully. Yeah.
Well, that's it. It's kind of interesting how, I mean, I think it's it will be a whole other conversation and a whole other experience for folks out there who have kids. But the idea of this length of time, it's kind of recipe for nostalgia, isn't it? Because it takes you back to a time beforehand where, as I said, you don't have those deadlines. You don't have that sort of immediacy. I mean, you're still able and you're still working so much, but it's like there's that sense of time, which is reminiscent of like teenage years. It's sort of strange, and I say that with someone as someone who doesn't have kids and a ton of responsibilities outside of, you know, my home. But
yeah, I know that when this first went down, there I read something that said, oh, there's probably going to be a baby boom after this, and I kind of thought, I don't know if people, maybe there will
be a thing, yeah,
but I'm not sure that people are like, oh yeah, let's just make a baby now in a pandemic. Yeah, maybe there will be.
Bonk. Yeah, I know. Or like divorce, surely. That's probably going to be.
Oh, more, yeah. Right? Yeah. 1,000%. Yeah. I mean, like it's.
Forget about it.
People are now going to be forced to kind of like deal with their issues. Yeah. Especially if they're in a small flat, you know?
Yeah. Jeez. I know. Yeah. Not fun. Been there.
What are you doing? Like, so you're reading and you're eating banana bread, which is great.
I know. I sound like just a caveman, an intellectual caveman. The best kind.
me read Oscar Wilde today. Yeah. Is there another creative outlet that you have? Is there something that you're, you know?
Yeah, I mean, all of the above, you know, like painting, watching movies. I just watched Swiss Army Man for the first time, which hadn't seen. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. I loved it.
It's Radcliffe, right? It's Daniel Radcliffe.
Yeah, and Paul Dano. And that, tremendous.
He's great. Like, Dan makes the best, because he's in Miracle Workers too, which is a fucking phenomenal show if you haven't seen it.
Which show?
It's called Miracle Workers. It's him and Steve Buscemi, and season, it's sort of like Blackadder. Each season is a different time, is a different storyline with the same people.
Oh my god, I have to see it. I'm the biggest fan of Steve Buscemi. That's crazy.
They're both great. So you watch Swiss Army Man. What else?
I finally watched The Jinx. Haven't seen that. Finally watched that. And Succession. I'm watching Succession, which is fantastic.
Everyone says that we haven't watched it yet.
It's really good. It's also just got like the best, it's got the best actors and the storyline's fantastic and it's completely absurd. And Nicholas Braun is so good. Have you met him?
I may be, you know.
He's really tall.
I think.
He's great. He's really good in it. He plays Cousin Greg and it's just like, but everyone in it's fantastic. It's Sarah Snook and Jeremy Strong and everyone. I feel like that weird thing where I'm not going to list the entire cast, but everyone is so good.
No, there isn't, because it's like, because it's real people drama. Like, I know it's a bit heightened, but my wife and I generally, like, we're watching The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina on Netflix. Like, we tend to like anything that has like a weird supernatural or horror or some sort of weird thriller, but like real people drama, it's difficult for it's difficult to really sit down and focus on that. I'm like, yeah, this could happen. You know,
I know. It's interesting, isn't it? When you're kind of drawn to something which initially it just seems so other. It just seemed at arm's length. It seemed like an entirely different world. And I watched A Quiet Place recently.
Yeah.
And whatever it meant, it was just the connection with people having to adapt to something.
Yeah.
Fascinating to watch.
Yeah.
It really, really is. Yeah, it's strange.
Have you stopped to think about at all, like, because now that the momentum of our lives has just like come to a grinding halt, have you started thinking about like, oh, you know, when this is all through and I finish working on Why the Last Man, like these are the types of things that I want to do or the types of roles that I want to pursue. Like, do you think about your career in that kind of a tapestry, or do you just sort of like, is it just a case by case, whatever comes in, you then sort of decide?
I guess it depends. I mean, yeah, these circumstances are very interesting because I think it does force you to actually exist in the present. Mm-hmm. Again, not to sound corny, which I do because I keep saying not to sound corny, but there's something about this time where you don't necessarily meditate too much on the past or the future because you're so in the moment. Which has got its advantages. But in terms of a career, I've never been the one to have a plan per se, but I've certainly implemented control where I can in a job where you really don't have much of it, in the sense of knowing at certain points what I didn't want to do,
right,
for better or worse. And then as time's gone on, I think you do start to kind of cultivate a troop around you or a world around you and people of similar taste, hopefully, people who challenge your taste and all of that stuff. But I know filmmakers who I'd love to work with. I think that's sort of the perennial thing and the thing that you look for and seek. But I think it always felt just kind of silly and a bit trite to have some big plan.
Yeah, and it's impossible. Hard anyway, because you just don't know. Like, you just...
Yeah, I mean, maybe, but it's interesting, isn't it? It's certainly something, as I've gotten older, where, first of all, you're honest about how much you've changed. You're honest with yourself about, and with other people, about what you valued when you were 20 as an actor, and what you knew then compared to what you know now, and how your world was actually the purview of being an actor at that age is so much more limited,
right?
Compared to now. And you kind of start to question what your responsibility is as an actor. Is it just acting? And are you supposed to, you know, are you supposed to play this role on top of a persona, on top of, it's interesting sort of what it means,
right,
more and more when you deconstruct it, I suppose.
You definitely pick cool stuff to work on. So that obviously, you know, like when you hear someone's name, when they start stacking up credits and stuff they worked on, you go, oh yeah, they actually pick cool stuff. I always kind of think, well, they're probably fun to hang out. They're probably cool to hang out with because they have to actively choose those things. And so those must be extensions of their personality because,
right,
they're exploring all these different things. I mean, it is sort of a roadmap when you start to put everything all together.
Yeah, and it's nice how often it happens where you can do a film and then that filmmaker's friend who's also from Austin, who's also into, you know, there's a whole group of filmmakers who are all buddies and they're all the same as, you know, whole groups of actors. And I think that's it, isn't it? Same as comedy troupes. It's like,
yeah,
everyone is sort of in it together and you meet people through people and it can become quite a beautiful tribe to be a part of. But that's not to say that, you know, then that becomes your new safety, doesn't it? It becomes your new safe spot. So if the dangerous thing is to step on to something more shiny, where you might actually for once have like a nice hairdo and decent makeup. I mean, decent in the sense of people make you look nice. I should maybe consider thinking about doing more of that. less like sweaty grime all the time.
Yeah, but the thing that I saw when I looked at your Wikipedia page was that you almost became a veterinary surgeon, but then quickly.
Yeah, but I said that, you know, that was like one of those things you say when you're 15. And I was like, I was going to be a vet. And it was like, I fainted because a cat had gallbladder stones removed in front of me. And that dream just busted. But that was actually for 2 seconds.
But then you found improv.
Exactly, so close. But what's strange is I also feel like a number of the veterinarians that I would watch, there were all these like TV shows when I was growing up of like vets. And a lot of them like turned out to have really like sinister pasts. So I think that also like, yeah. Like not great, you know?
Well, listen, if I have a kid someday when he's 8 or 9, he starts dissecting animals, I'm probably going to raise an eyebrow.
That's fair.
He's like, oh, I just want to be a vet. I'm like, but really? You sure?
And if it's a, what are we calling these animals again? The armadillo-esque? Corona
pangolins.
If it's a pangolin, then
they're endangered. So then he would super be breaking the law at that point.
Wow, how would he have even gotten it? Yeah, so strange.
The internet.
Jeez,
that's how he would have gotten it. And again, this is not to take a dump on vets. What they do is amazing and heartbreaking.
Amazing. I just got a bad. I don't know what happened. I just got the wrong window into that profession.
It was the right window though, because it led you in a much better direction.
It led me to stardom. No, I'm joking. Absolutely joking. Like, you.
Maybe you'll get to play a vet in something.
Yes, wouldn't that be nice?
But I just love that improv. Like, was improv training something you pursued, or was it just sort of the pivot that
I did a theater group once a week, which was awesome because it was kids from all different backgrounds, all different ages, and we were all thrown together, and you basically had to stand up and potentially fall into deep hot water and embarrass yourself. And that was one of the most incredible things, thinking back on it, what that does for you as a person, because obviously we're all these mobile bags of nerves, but it teaches you to kind of, I don't know, just put something out there and stand behind it.
Yeah.
And it was really, I think it was actually really, really far more formative than I knew at the time. It was through like that theater group. We did improvisation. We wrote our own stuff, and it was, some things were comedic. And then I always find it strange when you did an improvisation that was extremely dramatic, you know, right. Very serious. It sort of just seemed odd.
Yeah, I don't understand serious improv. I know it exists. Long form improv, though, seems very foreign to me, because it, whether or not it's comedic or dramatic, it's still just the idea of like having to remember this wealth of information that you start building and calling it back and constructing the world in real time. And I have friends who are unbelievable at it.
Wow.
But it just, like, that part of it feels rough to me. Like, oh, wait, what did I say before? Oh, you're a plumber? Like, I just, you know.
And it's an interesting tool when it comes up in work, too, because often you can have a fantastic script and people want to improvise around it, and that's fine. But it's questionable when people want to improvise because something's sagging, or there's some air that needs to be filled. And it's kind of, it's almost like a panic suggestion rather than something to better the project or enrich the characters. It's more like something like, we'll just improvise it and hopefully something good comes up, you know. It's like vomit.
But when people if people are sitting around, there's a lot of stuff of yours that they can watch. They should watch Vivarium, and then also Black Christmas was super fun too.
I was the biggest fan of Sophia Tikal. Mm-hmm. She's made some awesome movies, really cool, and I couldn't wait to work with her. I'd wanted to work with her for so long. And we shot that in New Zealand last summer.
Wow.
And she had to turn it around in like 3 months.
Oh my gosh. That's incredible.
Yeah.
The idea of even just being in somewhere else right now, working with a group of people.
Mad.
So I found a picture from literally the day before everything went haywire. I was working on, I was weirdly acting in something for a friend of mine, one of my old friends. And I found a picture of me like taking a selfie picture in front of like Video Village with other actors and the director and the sound people, and everyone's just clustered together, and I'm like, Jesus Christ, like I got almost a panic attack. Like, we were all just right next to each other. And
then, I know.
It was 2 years ago.
So strange. I had the same thing in New York. I was at a friend's birthday, and we were all just crammed around this table in this Italian restaurant, all like sharing pieces of fried ends of some fish. And it's just like a world away. It's totally nuts. But one day
it'll happen again. It will happen again. Like it's weird and shitty and awful, but we will get through it, and it will
feel so good.
It will happen again, and hopefully we'll appreciate it more this time.
I think so. Even like live music, that's what I'm missing, you know, going to a live concert. Maybe that's the first thing to do.
Who are you listening to right now that you would go see? Who would you consider breaking? Oh! Not that you would do it. Who would you consider breaking quarantine for?
I know. Aldous Harding.
All right. I'm going to write this down.
Aldous Harding is the future. She is unbelievable. And she's from New Zealand.
Okay.
And I'm a really big fan of hers. So I'd probably, she's got a Kate Bush thing going on, but she's, as a performer, she's just, I think she's fantastic.
All right. Aldous Harding. I've just written it down. And I also wrote down Willie Watson, which I feel like I should know, but I'm 100. I just talked to Catherine Hahn a couple of days ago, and I know this much is true.
Yes. Yes.
She is a magical creature. I love Catherine Hahn so much.
Isn't she incredible? Yeah. She is one of those. Yeah. She's one of those people. I met her a few years ago, and then we reunited, although didn't even see each other on the project. I know this much is true. She is so wonderful and has such an incredible quality. She's so compassionate. Quite extraordinary. When you meet someone like that, it stays with you a long, long time, doesn't it?
Yeah, because she has this infectious magnetic energy, mm-hmm. that just feels, it just feels like you want to be in this joy orbit around her, and she's so unbelievably talented. So I'm excited to see that when that
she's
comes
so out. And she's so connected to you immediately. She connects with people. She's a genius. I loved Private Life. Did you see that with her and Paul Giamatti?
No, but I'm writing this down too.
It is so great. It's by this wonderful filmmaker called Tamara Jenkins, who did a film called The Savages beforehand. But it's about a couple who basically are going through IVF potentially, but it's sort of to do with all of that about wanting to have children, and they are, the performances are just mind-blowing, and the younger actress in it is great too. But yeah, it's a brilliant film.
So as we're wrapping this out, is there any, like, what, just to focus on some, you know, like, for people who are feeling cooped up or stressed or whatever, do you just have some like joy advice, or like, what are you doing to find joy in the midst of this kind of chaos bubble that we're in?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say like structure's pretty good. I'd say mm-hmm. structure's been pretty helpful for me to have a Monday to Friday, and then really enjoy the weekends and just put anything you can find into your body to make yourself feel great. But really have a kind of structured week. And I mean, I get a lot of joy from painting and drawing, mm-hmm. and I think sort of sitting with that part of yourself. And also, as someone who is quite flaky, and I want to get better at that, I think connecting to other people is a lot easier, and it's so fulfilling. You can just pick up a phone. You can have a phone conversation with someone. You can write letters to people. You can sort of connect all over again in a different way. And I think it'll actually be far more focused and meaningful. I think Instagram is fine, but I think it's also not helpful in any way towards mental health at all. But cooking is wonderful. Learn how to really cook with some chickpeas and some sweet potatoes, and I've been doing a lot of cooking and eating, as we suggest and spoke about earlier. And think about what do you want to represent when you come out of it. Don't you think?
Oh, that's a great sentiment. What do you want to represent when you come out of it? That is great. And just a footnote on that, I think Instagram, if you let Instagram direct you, it's not great, but I think people need to remember, like, you could just follow like positive stuff or mental health stuff. Like you can sort of direct the algorithm to feed you the kind of experience that you want. But because many of us like mindlessly scroll through it, sometimes we're just given crap because it's like, it's just shoving popular stuff in our face, but you could create a positive experience, but you just have to be mindful of it.
You have to curate it yourself entirely. And I think in times like these too, it's very complicated to know what's real and what's not real. And especially for people out there who are by themselves, there can be a lot of noise just in your own mind. It's hard to kind of find some peace. So yeah, whatever helps to not confuse your realities, I think is a good thing.
Well, I can't thank you enough for taking the time. Thank you for, I hope this was fun and distracting for you for an hour.
So nice. No, thank you so much for having me on your wonderful show. It's so lovely. And it's also weird because it's like 11 a.m. for you and 7 something for me in the evening. So it's...
Yeah. We're on a weird time shift here. But the weather here, you have nice weather there and we have shitty weather here in L.A. So we have...
Aha! For once. The tables have turned.
Doesn't feel good at all. thank you. Please stay safe and stay healthy. And, I wish you all the best. And I hope you get to see your family very, very, very soon.
Thank you. Stay safe. And thanks so much for a lovely talk.
Okay. Thanks. You as well.
See you later. Bye.
ID10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.